This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Today, in the first of a special two-part series on recently passed federal health care reform legislation, we'll hear from the CEOs of La Crosse's two major health care systems and what they think it means for La Crosse area health care.
I would consider it a first step, but still work undone.
But we begin with an examination of a day in the life of a primary care physician. Their schedules are chock full with patient visits, consults, medicine refills, and much more. And now doctors and patients are wondering just how this new legislation may transform the current system and whether changes will indeed provide more accessible and affordable health care. Danielle Kading has this report.
They're buzzing me in.
At just after 7:30 in the morning, Dr. Eric Gunderson is sitting in his office at the Gunderson Lutheran Clinic in Onalaska. Dr. Gunderson stares at his computer, scanning through a schedule and a list of messages on the patients he'll be seeing. The full-time family physician holds clinic hours almost every day. He says a typical day may start and end at 7:30 so he can be more available to his patients.
A lot of consult reports, medicine refills, patient concerns, and try to get people in urgently that need to be seen urgently. Try to see patients that have been waiting for an appointment and scheduled physicals and things throughout the day. So it's pretty busy.
Gunderson, who is also a former president of the Wisconsin Academy of Family Physicians, says there are a lot of unknowns surrounding healthcare reform and what it will mean for physicians and patient care. However, he says there are often unintended consequences with new legislation.
As you move more towards government programs, it seems inevitably that you get more regulation and more paperwork and the threat of audit or the threat of revocation of your license and other things.
Gunderson says some providers feel regulation can get in the way of offering the best possible care. Additional concerns surround the 32 million uninsured that will be coming into the system. Dr. Melissa Stiles, with Family Medicine at the University of Wisconsin, says the current healthcare system won't be able to absorb them.
It's estimated that in the U.S. we need 40,000 family physicians to deal with the crisis of people needing primary care. So now we're going to add 32 million more Americans, but there's no primary care infrastructure for them to go to.
That shortage predicted by the American Academy of Family Physicians is still another 10 years off. Even so, Stiles says the system may look more to nurse practitioners and physician assistants to serve more patients. Karen Timberlake, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, says healthcare reform legislation does address the need.
Some of its provisions include additional resources for primary care residencies and medical schools and additional nurse training and some of the things that we know we need to do to keep up with the growing demand for healthcare services.
Secretary Timberlake says 98% of people in Wisconsin already have affordable access to care, but cost still remains a factor as the Medicaid program now amounts to $1 billion of the state budget. Gunderson says ensuring more people may not matter if the state can't foot the bill.
So if the reimbursement rate drops, then physicians will say, I literally can't afford to provide care to patients on this program because it doesn't pay me, and then those patients are left with insurance but no access to care.
And providers are currently reimbursed for the number of procedures done instead of the quality of care offered to patients. Secretary Timberlake says efforts to provide more incentives for value rather than volume are underway.
There's a pilot project that's made available in the Medicaid program so that Medicaid can reimburse providers at higher rates to make sure that they can have the resources to do that care coordination or to hire nurses to do it or staff a call line or, you know, whatever it is that needs to be done to provide better care coordination for patients.
Patient Jason Slusser of Onalaska says he has many questions and concerns about the legislation, but he says healthcare reform is a plus for Americans overall. But he thinks some in Washington missed the point.
The Republicans were against the Democrats, you know, and this is a huge bipartisan, you know, issue. It goes much deeper than that. I mean, this is about our country's health.
All agree the legislation is not a fix-all and changes will take time, time in which reforms have the chance to move the nation forward from its rank as 37th among healthcare systems across the globe. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. While President Obama signed the historic controversial healthcare reform law some 2 months ago already, as you're about to find out, even those most knowledgeable about health care at La Crosse's two largest medical centers aren't quite sure yet how it's going to work in practice. Franciscan Skemp President and CEO Dr. Robert Nessie and Gunderson Lutheran CEO Dr. Jeff Thompson sat down with a local media panel this week to answer questions about the new law. Our panel includes Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom and Danielle Kading and La Crosse Tribune health reporter Terry Rinflish. Dr. Nessie fielded the first question about what he thinks the legislation will mean for his medical center.
Well, as we looked at it within the Mayo Clinic system, we think the bill does some good things, but it's incomplete at this point. The bill has actually expanded eligibility for insurance, particularly in Wisconsin. While not the federal legislation, state legislation's increased the eligibility for Medicaid. They've come into the system. There's improved coverage for preventive services. There's some, I believe, needed change in the insurance system, but at the same time, there isn't a new payment system and not a fix for the disparities in geographic reimbursement for Medicare. So I would consider it a first step, but still work undone.
I think it's important for people to understand that the crux of the law that got accomplished had to do with insurance changes. There is several thousand items in the bill that instruct the Secretary of Health and Human Services to work on a particular topic having to do with improving paying for outcomes and access and a variety of things. But they shall work on it. And so it's hard to know exactly how all that's going to come out because there is an awful lot up in the air.
And speaking with Secretary Timberlake, the Department of Health Services Secretary for the state of Wisconsin, she mentioned, since you mentioned Medicare reimbursement, I'm just going to jump right into that. She said that there will be about 2 years of federal funding that will come down to help increase reimbursement rates. Is that something that you look on favorably for your institutions?
Well, we certainly would look on improved reimbursement rates favorably, of course. Wisconsin, for both of our systems, is one of the lowest payment areas in the United States. And thus, improving that and actually equalizing payments is something we'd be in favor of. I do think, however, you can change payments for 2 years, but if you really don't change the reason you get paid, if you don't really reform the reimbursement model and reform the care model, 2 years of payments just kicks the can down the road.
I think another important piece of it is to understand who is it good for. Across most health systems in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, that no one is able to be efficient enough to break even anywhere near on Medicaid, and certainly not on Medicare either. When you say there'll be increased payments for at least a couple years, that is fine, but think about the effect of the bill around the country. In those states that have not been as disciplined as Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa, who have not covered most of their lower economic groups with Medicaid programs, for example, Texas has 28% of its adults that are not covered. The federal government picking up all that Medicaid payment will come out of everyone's federal taxes, but our federal taxes are included in that. So our employers and individuals in the upper Midwest who have been diligent about covering those folks that need Medicaid will also help cover the folks in Texas and Florida, California, New York that haven't been covered in the past nearly as well. So the sorting out, will there be an advantage? Sure. If it passes through to the givers of care, that is an advantage. That will help, and it will help us mitigate this cost shift onto employers. But we have to understand that all that money comes from somewhere, and it's going to come from our taxes.
What are some of the obstacles that are facing your institution and also Gunderson Lutheran? And, you know, how much help are you expecting to get with that? Do you feel like that's going to be left up to your institution or other institutions as a whole by themselves, or are they going to get much guidance from the state or federal government on this?
I think Jeff mentioned it specifically. that much of the bill is left to to the future, to work yet to be done. And this is in the form of pilots. So I think both of our groups are able to separately or eventually perhaps even together apply for some new reimbursement methods to support the high-value care we deliver. But I really don't think that the government intends to provide us with a design template for that. I think it's something we will have to do. And then the additional issue is we have to do it, and we have to see if the government will accept it without layering on so many other rules that it's not possible to accomplish.
I think there are a couple big areas that we can do things to affect our future rather than having it done to us. One is, as Rob implied, is that there are opportunities for us as large groups to work together on a number of issues. And in fact, during the healthcare reform, a group pretty much started by Gunderson, Marshfield, and Mayo, then added in folks from as far west as Everett, Washington, and Intermountain Health in Utah, and all across the upper Midwest into Cleveland Clinic and Geisinger Clinic. And this group together was able to influence a lot of the language. And frankly, we got a lot of help from our regional congressmen from Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin to help push this language of saying we will not hit our keeping costs down marks or improve the quality at the rate we need to do unless we change how people get paid across the country, not just pay La Crosse or Wisconsin more. It's pay everybody in a different fashion. I think the other opportunity is to not believe that the federal government or the state government is going to fix all this. Those communities that have decided they're going to take the health of the population into their own hands and say, we can lower the cost of care partially by addressing the huge issues that face virtually every community in this country: obesity, the effects of tobacco use, the effects of alcohol abuse. Those issues can be addressed by a community, and we're making some strides in our community here in La Crosse and trying to work with the surrounding communities to move on that. So this is a very complex issue, and I am convinced that we're going to do better as groups rather than as individuals.
When we talk about whether the government will give us direction to do new things, actually the high valuers of the country, the Wisconsins, the Gundersons, the Mayos, the Marshfields, et cetera, we, in our opinion, would like to be able to do something with government support and a general set of goals we all want to accomplish rather than have the government try to design something that fits all comers. America is a very diverse place. And the group practices, the integrated practices in the upper Midwest, I hope, will be allowed to innovate and move quickly to serve our patients and the citizens of this region without waiting for the entire country to change.
So how are Franciscan Schemp and Gunderson Lutheran taking the health reforms into their own hands and evaluating them and seeing how they're going to play out at your institutions?
Well, within the Franciscan Schemp environment, first of all, I think you'll note that both of our groups are working together in terms of support for wellness initiatives in the community and employer-based healthcare improvement. And we're collaborating through the consortium and community health projects as well. That's part of it. That's where Jeff is going when he talks about support for community wellness. Franciscan Schemp, in addition to that, along with our colleagues at Mayo, are designing a major project to move forward for basically organized care of common chronic diseases. That's where we spend most of our money. And in putting together a care plan and then proposing a new reimbursement model for that, we can use the full power of Mayo Clinic to really push forward, we hope, the data necessary to support the model. And, of course, Jeff and his group are doing similar things as well.
It is very difficult to pull a string or push a button and fix it all. What we're going to have to do is demonstrate how to fix portions of it piece by piece. And that's where I believe organizations or groups of organizations can look at an item and say, we can get our arms around this, we can do this better. So one of the popular talks is about a medical home. Well, there are a variety of definitions, but it basically means a place where patients get their care coordinated, and it's often surrounding a primary care clinician. Well, we have worked on that model and are expanding that model, but we also have found that some patients with very complex chronic diseases have multiple clinicians in multiple sites, and it's very difficult for a primary care physician to have the time to keep track of all these things going on. So in those patients who are very high utilizers of care and have very complex care needs, we have assigned experienced nurses to keep track of 50, 60, 70 of these patients at a time, to help them understand what's coming next, to keep them on their medications, to make sure they get their follow-up. That model, a model that we'll be presenting soon here in Washington, is a model that is not exactly what everyone's talking about with a medical home, but it's more adapted to patients who are moving from place to place to place and trying to conserve the amount of time that the primary care physicians have to spend on coordinating care. At some point, they need to make some pretty serious decisions, but a lot of the time, a nurse or an MA can help with the patient. So the patients end up with better health, fewer hospitalizations, less utilization in the emergency department. That ultimately is a model that can push down the cost of care while improving the health of the citizens. However, currently, that activity is not paid for.
Well, let's talk about primary care and patient care. One of the things that's often discussed is the infrastructure that's already in place. We're going to have about 32 million currently uninsured become insured. And the question on everybody's minds is the system as it is right now going to be able to handle the influx of new patients? What are you planning on or going to see at your institutions?
The clear answer is, while I think we are in better shape, particularly in the upper Midwest and other areas of the country, the experience in Massachusetts and elsewhere have already answered the question. No, we do not have enough of a robust model for primary care that can meet the needs of 32 million additional patients, or even, frankly, the coordinating care needs of the patients we have, as Jeff just discussed previously with his coordinated care model. What Mayo Clinic is doing right now is, of course, we're training primary care physicians and working on that. But I've been asked in my new role as the head of the health system working with Mayo Clinic to actually develop a Mayo model of community and continuing care, which really follows very closely what Jeff just talked about, the idea of multidisciplinary teams, care management infrastructure, the opportunity for a single data set Mayo-wide so we don't duplicate care or spend time reproducing history that is already available and recorded somewhere else within our system. All of those things will require a lot of basic infrastructure work, but frankly, right now, the payment systems in healthcare have not supported primary care, and we are way behind where we need to be in terms of the training programs. And it's important to know it's not just physicians, it's nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and all those experts and professionals support primary care delivery.
The number of people and the percentage of people who will come into the system quickly is much higher in other parts of the country. But in this region, there will still be additions to the system. And as we pointed out, as long as the current system is set up the way it is, where our region receives a very tiny portion of Medicare and Medicaid payments compared to the rest of the country, it will be a struggle even with a small increase in Medicaid patients. I think just about every organization in the upper Midwest that's a not-for-profit who takes all patients has seen a steady increase in government pay patients. and a steady decrease in commercial pay patients over the last 10 to 15 years.
So with the system that we have now, then, are we getting ahead of ourselves putting these reforms that we passed in place, or can we turn it around in the next 4 years and somehow have a happy world where everybody's insured and taken care of to the best of our abilities?
I think we're at the beginning of the beginning here, frankly, and I believe within 4 years, yes, we could turn it, particularly with the integrated groups in the Midwest. We have the infrastructure to do it. We have the motivation, and we have the practice style that could make this change. But we, Jeff and I know, can keep reminding people the systems you're seeing here in the upper Midwest, particularly Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas, these are systems that are the exception in the United States, these large group practices. So, yes, we could change. And frankly, if we had a pilot system or some sort of new care model or value index or outcome-based payments, some of the things that both of us have been mentioned, we can change pretty quickly. I'm not sure it leads to a happy place for all of America, though, because they can't. And how do we help them to come along and not try to desperately hang on to an old system that they figured out how to get paid for and damage our opportunity to really progress quickly to a new system? That's the harder question. Some of the stories Jeff and I hear are so far from the experience of people in the upper Midwest, you almost have to share them. So as I talk to one of the folks that come to our group for care, they talked about their experience down south of Tucson where they had some significant back pain. Well, they were told they needed an MRI exam. Well, that may or may not have been indicated, but yes, they needed it. So when they said, where should I go? They were told, well, go anywhere you want. There's a lot of them. Just pick one. Well, you can't – it's hard to imagine that conversation occurring in our system. And this same person was sent from the orthopedics area over to physical therapy. They actually shared the same hallway, but the records weren't transferred. All these things that we do just as – and people here accept just as the way we do business – are not in the infrastructure of many of the groups in this country, and that's the level of the problem we're dealing with. It's pretty fundamental for other groups.
Dr. Robert Nessie, the president and CEO of Franciscan Skemp, and Dr. Jeff Thompson, CEO of Gunderson Lutheran, talking about what healthcare reform means for the two major healthcare systems in the La Crosse area. We'll continue the conversation in this next half hour with media panel questions from the La Crosse Tribune's Terry Rinflish and Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom. WPR's Danielle Kading was also a member of the panel. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto.